Okay, let's talk technology now. We were going to talk about Bigfoot, possibly in Cannock. We can't get hold of Ben Walgate, if you're listening. You should have been on the radio now, Ben, but if you can give us a call, then we will put you on in the slot that was intended, honed, groomed for you. Okay, let's talk tech now, though. This story was around a few months ago. We didn't talk about it then, and I wanted to catch up on it, and some other stuff too. This is the story, first off. Engineers in Japan have set a new world record for the fastest internet speed. It's so fast, you'd be able to download nearly 80,000 movies in a second. The need for speed, internet speed, is typically measured by how much data can be transmitted between two devices in a second. The new record is 319 terabits per second. Man who knows what that means is Fevzi Turkalp, the gadget detective who's online to us now. Fevzi, it's been too long since we last spoke. How are you?
I know. I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
I'm very good. It's probably 4 or 5 weeks since you were last on here.
I know.
So we have to rectify that.
Try not to take it personally, but yeah, okay.
319, what is it, terabits per second?
Yeah.
Sounds just astonishing. How do they do that?
Well, it's probably worth saying what a terabit is, first of all. So a terabit is 1,000 gigabits. So if you had very fast internet now, you'd have maybe gigabit Ethernet, not internet. So this is 319,000 times faster, potentially. How they do it is interesting, because the medium that they use to conduct the signal is fiber optic cable, not dissimilar to what's used now for when we have fiber internet now. A lot of our internet still uses, you know, copper wire, but if you go to Virgin, for example, their whole network is fiber optic. So it's not that it's, you know, a big difference in how it's in what they use to carry it. It's what they do at each end, which is kind of clever. They use a special laser called a 552 channel comb laser, which basically fires lasers down cable, but at different frequencies. So it's a way of multiplexing. It's a way of sending all this information on different frequencies, so it doesn't interfere with each other. Just in the way that, you know, how we manage to have voice calls over the same piece of copper wire that we send internet signals over, mm-hmm. you know, for our conventional broadband. It's similar to that. And what I see this as is, think about copper wire. So copper wire that came into our homes, you know, several decades ago, if not longer, was never designed for internet, much less broadband, but they kept finding more and more clever ways. You remember the days of dial-up modems and so forth? They were coming over the same copper wire that's still in use in many people's homes.
I still dream about those noises, Fevzi. You know, I was so excited when I went from a 48 to a 96. You remember that?
No, I remember going to a 56 and a 64. I don't remember. Oh, yeah, 96.
Oh, no. Was it 56? Hang on. No, you're right. It was 56, 28 and 56, of course.
Yeah,
it's
When I got my first ISDN line, I could have 64, or by pairing the two lines, bonding them together, I could have 128.
Ooh,
which,
Lord.
By the way, is what we're speaking on now, is an ISDN, because it doesn't require a lot of bandwidth. But the point that I'm making is, just as over the decades, engineers and scientists found ways of squeezing more and more data per second down those copper wires, now we're seeing a similar process happening with fiber optic cable, where they're finding new ways of sending. So the fiber optics is not massively different to standard fiber optic cable. What's different is what they're using to send it and decode it at the other end, and how they amplify the signal. And it is quite remarkable. They reckon they can maintain that speed over a 3,000-kilometre distance.
Gee. I mean, that is astonishing. And we kind of obliquely, I think, mentioned it in the summer, but it was a story that came and went. And I think it will have consequences, even though we won't in our homes anytime soon, speeds of that nature. When you start improving the internet generally, then it has a knock-on effect for all of it, doesn't
it? Yeah. So this technology in the first instance could be used for backbone, because they can have 3,000 kilometres. That's to say, you know, not necessarily coming into our homes and buildings directly, but just basically porting a huge amount of bandwidth from one country to the other, or from one part of the country to the other. But in time, because we are increasingly getting fibre to the door, it may be possible to get, you know, huge increases in speeds. And then it begs the question, Howard, well, why would you want that? You know, you're already able to stream movies, and, you know, are you really going to want to downloads thousands of movies per second. No, probably not.
It's unlikely, but who knows what... You know, who knows what kind of, for example, movie definition we've had, you know, 4K, 8K, who knows what's coming next?
Well, we're getting to the edge of sort of what human eye can discern. I think when it becomes important is when you start talking about these metaverses, where you are living in a virtual world and it has to create in real time, you know, a 3D world. You know, just imagine if you had to digitize the real world. It's a huge amount of data, everything that you can see. And if you suddenly...
So that's going to... I never thought of it that way. Thank you. Yeah. That is going to make... Which, you know, we know that they're working on this. We know that the people behind Facebook are already working on this metaverse that will include the ability to kind of go to places that you don't have to go to, that are constructs. So all of that is going to be made possible. And the Star Trek holodeck, if we want to put it in sort of tabloid newspaper terms, might well become a reality because of this technology. Just quickly, one thing to talk about. I know you're keen to talk about this. I love to, you know, I'm one of life's lazy people, I have to say. And I would always buy a digital camera and then I would never take it out. You know, take it on holiday, never bother taking pictures with it. Since we got phones that take pictures, I take pictures all the time. And I think, you know, it's only my stupid view, but I think they're improving.
Yeah, they are.
Apparently the technology for taking pictures is about to take a massive leap forward.
Yeah, so I was reviewing the new flagship smartphone from Google. It's called the Pixel 6 Pro. And Google are sort of past masters at this thing called computational photography. And actually Apple are doing a form of it as well. So at the moment, without computational photography, a digital camera is much like a conventional film camera in that there is a lens and the lens focuses light representing the image on a sensor. So the sensor used to be film, you know, that was chemically processed. Now it's a digital sensor which is sensitive to light and it's stored as digits. But whatever comes through the lens is what it stores. And that's, in that sense, it's conventional photography. Computational photography is different. When the camera or the camera phone has such a powerful processor as these new flagships do, it has the ability and the time and the processing power to take every pixel that it's storing that's come through and hit the sensor and modify it. And why would you want to modify it? Well, think of it this way. You know, when you set the exposure of a photo, you have to make a choice, or the camera has to make a choice for you of what the how much light it should let in. But if the picture has got lots of different light levels, let's say you're standing in front of a bright window behind you, yeah. If you expose for the average amount of light in the picture, then that will make your face dark because there's a lot of light in the picture, but just not necessarily where the main focus of the picture is, which would be your face typically. Now, on the other hand, if you do what they do, which is spot metering, where you just take a light reading from the face and expose for that, then the what's visible through the window gets burned out. You can't see the clouds or anything. It's just bright white. But what you can do to get what's called high dynamic range is you can interpret that picture. The computer can interpret the picture and every dot of it. It can correctly expose the bright area, let's say the window behind you, as well as exposing your face. So there's no detail loss, the dynamic range from the brightest. Now, there's no conventional camera that can do that. So, and this is just the beginning. So what we're moving towards is where, you know, the camera does lie is not just that you Photoshop it afterwards and change it. This can change it in real time and just make the best picture.
Oh, Fevzi, I can't keep up with it all. Hey, listen, thank you for doing this for me. If people want to ask you a tech question, where do they go? I know they can do it 24/7, 365.
Yeah, so come and say hello on... absolutely, I'm up all the time. Come and say hello on Twitter, at Gadget Detective. And if you want to find out more about what I get up to, www.gadgetdetective.com.
Draw a gentle veil over a lot of that, I think, Fevzi. Thank you so much. Fevzi Turkup is the Gadget Detective. Definitively check him out online.